Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Well, Javier, lots of developments tonight. The main segment featuring Sami Zayn and Jimmy Uso with Jay coming out, Solo coming out. More great stuff. This shows there's more story to be told with the Bloodline. We knew that, but now we're seeing it kind of get revved up again as we move past Sami Roman to Sami pleading his case to Jimmy that he was the guy who made honorary Uso and Uso all possible. And he was the one who turned on him, guilt-tripping him. Jimmy seemed like he was, if you study his face, it seemed like he was breaking a little, but he was snarling at him to cover up for it. But he was hearing what Sami was saying, maybe feeling conflicted. And then, as Cole said, he just couldn't listen to Sami make that much sense any longer, and he had to hit him with a microphone and beat him down. Really, I think, great stuff here. This is some of what I wanted to hear from Sami the last couple of weeks. I think there's still more to explain about the point at which he decided to snap and break away and turn on the Bloodline, even though he had spent so much time building up hope that he would be part of it. But this covered so much of that territory, including saying family shouldn't have to go through what he went through, having to prove himself and jump through hoops and being disrespected and all of that by Roman, and telling Jimmy that's what Roman does to you. I really like this this closing segment on the show, and WWE's got this just amazing storyline going on. And despite rumors and fears to the contrary, it's not over yet, and Sami's not done yet. And for those who really want to see Sami one-on-one against Roman at WrestleMania, we're seeing now the story that they were committed and excited to tell with Sami and KO against the Usos. And that's why we're not getting that match, you know, or one of the reasons besides the Cody aspect of it too. So Javier, there's my opening thoughts. How about yours?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and also keep in mind that this was not supposed to happen. This was supposed to be like a 1 week gag essentially, that just took a life of its own, and then they just struck out with it. So, I'm thoroughly enjoying this. You know, in a lot of the commentary you've done, there's one thing I've kind of like, I mean, I'm not going to say forcefully disagree, but I disagree with the fact that Sami has to explain himself to us, because so far in the storyline, we've never been direct, you know, the stuff that's going on between them has never been directed to us as the audience. It's almost like the audience is just, you know, seeing this play out in front of them. So a lot of these conversations, like, they feel like they're like internal to them, and there's enough there where you get an idea. And as they talk to each other, you start seeing that come out and come out more. I don't need like a full blown, like, this is why, but we have an idea. You know, he was tired of the way, just like we saw on TV, like, you know, we would see him and roll his eyes constantly at Sami throughout this entire thing, and Sami playing off the idiot. But I think it was kind of telling when they said, you know, watch what's happening on TV. You get to see a lot, you know, when you're not here. And that also kind of fits into that where, you know, and we've seen that bits and pieces as the storylines played out of, like, you know, them playing back the shoulder bump and stuff like that, those little things. And the fact that the stuff that's happened, there's a memory to it. And, you know, so Sami, who we've kind of, like, throughout this entire build, we've been talking about, like, are they playing him? Are they doing this? Are they doing that? And we assumed that he was completely outside of being in the know. It seems like he was more in the know than we were let on. And he, you know, he was fine going along with it because the Sami Zayn character wanted to belong to something. And, you know, when you have that feeling of belonging, sometimes you end up choosing, you know, looking at the other side of the darker stuff that groups do. But, you know, I could see, like, the stuff and how this stuff is coming apart. And I'm just thoroughly engrossed in this.
Yeah, no, I think you have a good point. And I'm sure that's their argument is, you know, Sami doesn't need to explain himself. I still think Sami looking at that camera and sending a message to Roman, to Heyman, to the Bloodline leading into that match would have, for me, made the story feel more complete, as opposed to inferring from all the body language and the buildup and what we know in our heart. I think as viewers, we wanted to have that release valve of Sammy explaining it and sharing with us what was going on in his head in that minute before he made that big choice. And I will stand by wanting that, but I have always added at the end of my critique, my criticism, my expression for more in that specific way, that this was still in really good shape and it wouldn't be a problem in Montreal, and it certainly wasn't. But I am happy that we got Sammy confronting Jimmy and saying the things that he said to Jimmy tonight. Do you have any critique of how he approached Jimmy? I feel like that was a promo that rewarded people who pay attention to detail with long memories, who have followed the intricacies of the story, not people who have jumped on board lately, although welcome aboard if you have. I'm sure that's how WWE feels. But this was a reward to people who have been following it all along, and it shows you want the characters to be as aware as you are as a viewer who's paid attention to what's happened in the past and have recall of it and to express their feelings about things that happened months ago that have been built up inside that now Sammy has a new perspective on or is accepting as the reality that he was denying when he still had his heart set on, as you put it, Javier, belonging to a group that maybe he deep down knew for a while didn't match his values and was a bad group to hang with. Your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I there's still one big more domino, one very big domino will still fall, is his ultimate interaction with Kevin Owens, and we'll probably get more of an explanation during that, and probably the most complete we're going to get. I just don't think we're going to get like a step-by-step on day one, this is what I was thinking. On day two, this is what I was thinking. I think, you know, it's more of a, but I think we'll get, end up getting some semblance of closure when the two of them, you know, finally get the hug moment. Cause that's like the next big moment in the storyline is the hug moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The fact that, it kind of, like, even from when he showed up, it already felt like he was already expecting a confrontation with Jimmy, because ultimately Jimmy's decision is going to be to side with the family over the friend. And his thing is like, the family thing is so ingrained in him that it's, like he said, it was like, he didn't even hesitate, you know?
Yeah.
So he didn't even hesitate. Now, I this is why I like the conflict there, because that lack of hesitation showed his loyalty to his family, which is, you know, a positive trait for Jimmy, that he's going to choose them no matter what over, you know, loyalty to a friend, that he thought. But Jimmy, I think Jimmy did a great job also acting like, you know, yeah, I wasn't playing, you know, he did get some. And I mean, definitely helped if you've been following it. But I think even like if you weren't, there was enough exposition the whole thing for you to know. I mean, you're not going to be, obviously, if you haven't been following, you're not going to be emotionally engrossed in it, because you're just being, you know, because there was a lot, this was exposition heavy, explaining what happened at the Rumble, pretty much everything. And if you add that to the package that happened earlier, you could have just seen, this could have been your first episode, and you have a general gist of what's going on. Where you could actually on board and then, you know, go on to the to wherever the next step of the story is going to be.
Yeah, this isn't like, Succession, where you hear good things about it, or Severance, or, you know, whatever, Peaky Blinders, you're like, oh, I can start at the beginning. It's not as easy, you know, because everybody, you want to catch up to live action when it comes to this. That said, I bet there's a YouTube video out there where someone spliced together, although maybe copyright violations would prevent it. But WWE should do it if no one else has and they haven't yet, which is just not a documentary per se with all kinds of additional footage, but just all the Bloodline segments, just chronologic, like for the last year, just put them together so people can catch up and people can review it and relive it. Cause I think this is a storyline that would stand up well to that format. There's a lot of wrestling storylines that you couldn't string together and not expose some holes in it or some weak parts. But I think it would really shine if they were to do something like that, and it would be a good way to get more people in the mix.
Well, here's an anecdote from the Royal Rumble. I was watching it with my friend, my brother, and my sister-in-law. And when the moment of the Rumble when Sammy accidentally speared Jay, the sound that came out of my friend, and he's not a hardcore follower, was like a plaintive, oh, no.
I love it.
And it was so natural.
Oh,
that
that's great.
My sister-in-law started laughing, and he's like, "Oh, you boys and your soap operas," because we were engrossed in that moment, and we knew that
yep.
this meant that there's probably gonna be blowback over this. So yeah, I mean it's been a long time since the storylines like reached this, and I think like. Probably since in this kind of story, I think the last thing I remember was the whole Mega Powers explodes over the fight over Elizabeth. I mean, there were compelling stories during the Attitude Era, but there were different kinds. But this kind of like dramatic, where I would say it's a soap opera there was also a lot of stuff, BTE, and, you know, what led into the creation of AEW, but, yeah, so I'm...
Oh, don't do that, Javier. Do not bring Being the Elite into the bloodline. I mean, the Being the Elite was fun, you know, college dorm room, frivolous nonsense, and there was nothing wrong with it, and if it's for you, it was great, but come on.
I'm more referring to the Bullet Club Civil War between... Cody Rhodes and they were firing at the hottest, and I would put it on the same kind of thing because it was the personal relationship between them, I think that was the only other one I could think of memory where it was like a personal drama between these characters fighting over control.
So Javier, what you're telling me is that AEW is going to have a hot streak, a storyline for the ages that's going to rival this when Brandon Cutler finally stands up to Matt being so mean to him.
I'm not gonna lie. There's a bunch of stuff I've been watching today, I'm like, man, you know what? This almost seems – this kind of seems like something that AEW tried, and this is coming out better. I'll recognize it when I get to my notes. But I had that thought, like, twice, and I'm like, wow, this sort of is kind of like that one storyline in AEW, but, like – the characters are better positioned, and the focus is more on them, huh? and to be honest, this is what I personally, when AEW was first announced, this is the kind of storyline I was hoping for.
Wow.
This is the kind of thing I was hoping for, like a dramatic and even melodramatic at points, because I'm into the melodrama. I'm less into the realistic kind of like stuff, and I like more the grandiose emotions and the over which is kind of like what wrestling kind of is it's enhanced fighting. That's what I was hoping for AEW, and I'm getting more of that here than over there.
So Michael Nakazawa is Solo Sikoa. I don't know. Don Callis is Paul Heyman.
Seriously, the pieces are there. The pieces are there, and this is the kind of story they could have been telling.
I know. No, hey, and you know what? With this new AW All Access show, maybe that's the vehicle for a sit down with CM Punk and the Bucks and Kenny.
Yeah.
And they can all discuss who's going to go to WWE first, and they're going to check the dates their contracts expire. And oh man, all right, let's not get too far off track here. We got a lot of people on hold. Our on-site correspondents already waiting for us. I'm excited to hear what it was like in the building in Evansville tonight, and so much more on this episode of SmackDown. Friday nights are so fun right now. When WWE puts on a meaningful show, and there's been a couple SmackDowns recently where it's been good, but it's like, all right, we told the stories we have to tell. We're kind of just underlining things, except for, maybe one or two segments. This was a pretty full show. I mean, Ronda Rousey in a storyline, Bray Wyatt developments. We might know Gunther's opponent for WrestleMania now. We had tons of Dominic, which Alex Donald's excited about because he gets to write about Dominic on his SmackDown reports right now. On and on, and it's a perfect week to have you on, Javier. Well, every week is great, but we've got some Spanish maybe that you can tell us what was said. And
I don't have to because they literally repeated everything they said.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was wondering.
I hate. I mean, I despise that.
Yes. And then, but also Firefly Funhouse imagery and whatever. We'll piece that. We'll decode that. So lots to talk about here. So I want to pause and introduce the show, and then we'll get to Tom, our on-site correspondent. And then everybody who's on hold, don't hang up. I want to hear from all of you. So we'll pace ourselves. Okay, I don't want to make promises I can't keep. I am aiming to pace ourselves well so no one has to be on hold for too long. We are light on emails, so I do want to I want to let people know they'll have time on their calls, but we don't want to make you wait too long. Anyway, so let's just do that. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, February 24th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, a way of communicating wrestling happenings prior to the popularization. Is that how I say that, Javier? I don't know. The widespread use of the internet. We have been through many, many, many forms of media, and podcasting might be the most fun of them all. And we are here to talk SmackDown. The other voice you hear so far is Javier Machado. He is a PW Torch contributor, does reports, hits and misses, podcasts, plays a lot of roles around here. And he is often called into the show for roundtable segments late in the post shows. And every once in a while, we get him for the full show. And this is one of those times. Javier, welcome.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You threw me off with
You're checking. You're checking my.
I'm not doing it on the computer. I'm just doing it myself. You know, it's like, But yeah, you gotta. You can't do that, man. When we're doing one of these things live,
because it bugs you. It's like an itch. You gotta scratch.
I mean, I gotta pause the fix way too many times when that stuff comes up. So.
Awesome. So, like I said, so much more to talk about here. Thanks for joining us. If you want to hear these shows, if you enjoy what we do and you enjoy these shows, you're listening on the free side, we encourage you to support us and you'll get a lot in return by becoming a VIP member or a Patreon supporter. Then the most obvious perk for people listening to this is you just get to have a streamlined listening experience. We take out the digital ad inserts, the in-house pre-recorded plugs. You just get to listen straight through to the show, and it starts at $5 or $6 on Patreon to get the ad-free versions, and you can upgrade. You can upgrade to other things, including getting all the VIP shows. You can also subscribe directly through your iPhone account. So it's just a frictionless way to go VIP and hear all our VIP shows. And you can also get our VIP membership through our VIP website with PayPal or credit card or debit card. And also, when you do that, gain access to our 30-plus years of archives of podcasts, hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s, fascinating stuff, and over 1,800 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. So the way to get information on that is pwtorch.com/govip, pwtorch.com/govip. It's a great season to go VIP with AEW's pay-per-view coming up in just over a week, and then WrestleMania shortly thereafter. So we'd really appreciate your support. As a small business, we rely on you to do what we do, and we'll give you, I think, a lot of value in return. Okay, so let's get moving on the show, because we have so much to talk about, and we'll start with our on-site correspondent. Tom is calling us after attending in Evansville tonight. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad to be on.
Excellent. Well,
thanks
for taking time to talk to us. So just overall, I'll throw to you just in general, what was the experience like in the building tonight, and what was your personal highlight from the experience?
You know, it was a really fun show. I go to most of the shows here in Evansville. I was able to go to Raw last year. Was able to see Cody. It was a big experience there. And then, you know, there's a big difference between that show and this show. I felt like the atmosphere was the fans that were in the building for SmackDown actually followed the storylines and were invested in what was going on, especially with Sami Zayn and the Bloodline. Whereas when I was at Raw, it was just, you know, a lot of casual fans and people just coming because it was WWE, which also, you know, you could tell a difference in the actual attendance. It wasn't a bad Raw, But this SmackDown show, I feel like was between 75% and 80% full here in Evansville at the Ford Center. I think it only holds about 10,000, but it felt like it was about 75%, 80% full. And
interesting.
As far as the
go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
As far as the highlight of the night for me, I'm a big Braun Strowman fan. I know there's not probably a lot of those out there, but I'm one of them, and I was glad to get to see him. I wish they would do a little bit more with his development of character, and that's kind of always been the issue there. But that was a pretty cool highlight for me. Also, seeing Sami Zayn come out, I think that overall was probably the best moment of the night.
Cool. I want to throw it to Javier for his first question for you, Tom. Javier Machado, the co-host.
Hey, Tom. I was wondering, because it's always hard for me because ever since they started doing some sound sweetening, it's hard, and it's, the technology has improved. It's been hard. But how was the it seemed like Dominic got a lot of heat and the crowd, like, really loathed him. How was the reaction, Dominic?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think there was a single person in there that was rooting for Dominic. However, I do think people get a kick out of him. I did, you know, hear some chuckles and stuff at some of the things he was saying. But overall, you know, I think people really want to boo him.
And how was the reaction to Charlotte? Because that kind of felt, you know, compared to some of the other champions that we've seen in both between Book Raw and SmackDown, she kind of felt like, I don't know if it's that the crowd don't know whether to cheer for her or boo for her. How was the reaction to her?
I think that's 100% what the issue is. Is, you know, we're still trying to figure out if she's a heel or a face. That's just, I think, is a problem with her character as a whole. I think people definitely enjoyed seeing her come out. Like, she felt like a big deal. And I definitely think people want to boo Rhea, but I think they also really like Rhea and think she's doing a phenomenal job. So I think that makes it tough as well. But Charlotte definitely came off as a star, and so did Rhea.
And when it comes to the wrestling, because a lot of times in the you know, there's definitely like a different feel, like when you're watching an AEW show and like how the crowd is with the wrestling. How engaged are people actually in the actual in ring stuff? And was there a difference between the different matches that they had?
Yeah, I feel like most of the matches were, unless there was high spots or if, like, Xavier Woods done a really good job of trying to get people kind of into the matches, and they're more into him than they were the match. But the biggest one for me was it seemed like that everybody was really into the Rey Mysterio Karrion Kross match, which kind of surprised me. I mean, I know Rey's, you know, he's a huge star, and doesn't really matter what generation, you know, you're from. Most people are fans of Rey Mysterio, but I really thought they were more into that match than they were any of the matches tonight. I think most of them, you know, once they started, you know, the actual getting into the deep of the match, I feel like people kind of lost interest because it was more of a, you could definitely tell it was for TV instead of for the live crowd. And, you know, it kind of takes a toll on a crowd throughout the whole evening.
I was going to ask about the pacing of the show, including, you know, SmackDown itself, but what happened before, if anything happened afterwards. And WWE's been better about it lately from the outside correspondent I've been talking to about not making it feel like you just said, that you're sort of props in the background for a TV production. What were some other slow parts, and how has it changed over time for your experience? Where does this rank compared to other in-person experiences in Evansville?
It's definitely better, I would say, but there were still moments where they would cut the commercial and, you know, you think you're ready for something big to happen, and then it's commercial time, and then you just sit and wait. Especially, like, what comes to mind is when Natalya came out for her entrance. As soon as she got to the ring, they basically went to a commercial, and then, you know, you just sit there and it kind of takes you out of what was going on. And, you know, it wasn't too bad, but that was probably the biggest moment. I've been to shows in years past where it was hard to sit through. And I only feel like there was a couple of moments where it was like that. For the most part, they did a lot better job. And then as far as before the show started, they had a match between Hit Rose, Ashante, and Cameron Grimes. And it was a lot of basically them making fun of the town and playing to the crowd a lot. And the heels went over, and Cameron Grimes got beat. But it was kind of a definitely lackluster opening of the show. I had big hopes for Hit Row when they were in NXT. I was really hoping they would turn into something really good. I just feel like they're missing something, and they were pretty flat.
Was Cameron Grimes just doing the NXT gimmick, if you're familiar with it? Was there anything distinctive about him? Because, I mean, he's just sort of waiting in the wings to be called up probably after WrestleMania and finally get his national call up. But and did you have any impression of him? And again, was his gimmick or appearance any different than you might have seen before?
Yeah, he wasn't any different. The crowd seemed to like him. I was surprised. I felt like more of them knew of him than I would have figured they would. So I guess that's the positive sign for him. And he, of course, they were being, you know, the pesky heels, and he was definitely being the baby face. So the crowd was kind of eating that up a little bit, as much as they could. But, and you know, once they got into the match, there really wasn't anything special there. But yeah, hopefully we'll get something different out of him, and maybe he'll turn into something. I think he's got a lot of potential. So we'll see.
Was anything close to the response to Sami Zayn when he came out with a hoodie? Was there two or three other people who got?
No, not really. Just, well, Rey Mysterio had a really good, actually, when they just showed him in the backstage segment, he got a really good pop in. But I would say that nothing really compared to Sami.
Javier, do you have anything else you want to tell?
Just the Firefly Funhouse segment. How did the crowd react when that started?
You know, I think a lot of people were very intrigued, and they actually paid attention to it. So it's, you know, the people that were near us, I didn't hear anybody, you know, saying anything like, what in the world are we watching? Or it's almost like they, you know, this crowd really knew what was going on. So they were, you know, they were invested in it.
Talk about what happened after the show concluded, because the last, like, scene that we had was Solo just standing in the ring checking on Jimmy and Sammy retreating into the crowd. Did Sammy linger? Was there anything that happened as far as that angle went after that moment for the viewers or for the people in the building compared to the viewers at home?
Yeah, Anderson and Gallows came out and they had a tag match against Solo and Jimmy. Pretty good back and forth. It was a decent little match, and I felt like I was surprised, actually, that I'd say 70% of the crowd stayed for this match. I assumed everybody would just start taking off in droves, but they actually stayed for it. Pretty good little match, and Jimmy and Solo ended up getting the pinfall.
Was there anything about crowd response that surprised you tonight, either different in terms of being cheered or booed, or just more intense or less intense than you expected or would have expected?
I just think overall the crowd was just okay. I, you know, from watching some of the shows lately, I feel like a lot of the a lot of times the crowd's been more into the whole thing as in general, the whole thing, and where they weren't really all that vocal tonight, except for at, you know, certain moments or, you know, big things happened or whatever. So I was kind of surprised that even though they were there and, you know, invested, I don't think they were very loud.
Interesting, interesting. Javier, anything else you want to chime in with?
No, I mean, it sounds like a Japanese crowd.
Yep. Thomas, is there anything else you want to share about your experience tonight?
No, not really. I had a good time. Cool. I guess, well, yeah. I will say this. I guess I'm another one of those people that say they don't have anything else and then they start talking about something. But it was a really good show. It was a really good show, and I enjoyed it more than I have some in the past.
Nice. Awesome. Well, if you think of anything else after you hang up, feel free to email us. We'll check the inbox. But otherwise, we'll say goodbye to you, thank you, and move on to our callers who are on hold.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. If you want to be an on-site correspondent like Tom, drop me a line, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Put the name of the city and the date in the subject line. It makes it a bit easier to keep track of everything with all the shows every week. That applies to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Of course, if you attend a live event of any type or an Impact TV taping or an Undertaker Q&A theater show, house shows, anything like that, we would love to share your experience, your written report on our website, pwtorch.com. Also, you can send to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. If that's easier, pwtorch@pwtorch.com is sort of the catch-all for our team to find reports too. So if it's easy to remember, you can use that email too. Our phone number, if you have joined us in progress and want to call and participate, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. You can also email the show with your comments and questions about SmackDown if you're live streaming us right now. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Check out our website, by the way, pwtorch.com. We've got ratings reports up on NXT, comparing NXT so far this year to AEW, and year-over-year comparisons of NXT and AEW, different movements in ratings. We've got details on the rebound for Dynamite this week, over 1 million viewers, and the 3 or 4 key factors that contributed to the viewership rebound. We also have the latest on Kenny Omega with some details on his contract status and WWE's actual interest in him with some of our sourcing on that. A lot of stuff at pwtorch.com. Hope you're checking that out on a regular basis. All right, so let's start taking calls here, and we will begin. Let's see who's stuck with us here. A couple of people dropped off. We'll go to Erico 609 first. 609, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. It's Mike from Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Oh, hey, Mike. It's been a while since we talked to you. Good to hear from you.
Hey.
What'd you think of Dynamite tonight? Yeah.
SmackDown, Wes.
Yeah, I thought he said Dynamite. I didn't want to be rude and correct him.
That's okay. You leave it to
me. Wow. Be rude and correct me. Be rude and correct me. I don't mind. I don't consider rude to correct it. I mean, your tone might make it rude, but correcting isn't rude.
Yeah, I didn't. I wasn't positive you said that either, so I didn't want to sound silly, you know.
I did. You're all wrong. Everyone listening, wrong. I would not do such a thing. Stop your lies.
I didn't
see
Dynamite this week, actually. But,
all right.
Yes, I thought
what do you think of SmackDown?
SmackDown. Okay, it was a little slow the first hour. You know, I think the second hour was the best part of the show. I really liked the Ray and Dom exchange. I think that's really, really good. I'm looking forward to that match at WrestleMania. I think Dom is he's a really great heel, and I think we're all going to want to see Rey Mysterio, you know, kick his butt at WrestleMania. I think it's going to be great. I know, Wade, you weren't high on that match, I don't think, last year. But how do you feel about that matchup now? I suppose you're higher on that match now compared to last year. Like, I was always high on that match. I've been wanting to see those two feud. Father versus son, that's very interesting. I like that.
It's tough. I mean, of course, they've told such a good story. I'm interested in seeing it. Because, you know, sort of like Sammy in the Bloodline, Ray's got to snap at some point, you know, and Dominic is egging him on so much, and Ray is doing the understandable thing, which is turning his other cheek, but just feeling defeated and frustrated. But the both characters are so much further along right now. When it happens, when Ray starts doing whatever he does to Dominic, and I don't know what kind of offense Ray will unleash on him, I'm sure there's thought being put into that, you know, is it teaching him a lesson, but not trying to hurt him, out-wrestle him? Is it actually just losing control, and then fans are cheering because Ray just can't even control it? I don't know. I mean, that's a choice to make, but it's a well-told story, and obviously the pressure valve release in Ray is something people are looking forward to. Dominic's so much further along now, and it'd be a lot of work, but you can fact check very early on with Dominic. I said he's going to be a really good punk ass kid heel. And I mean, I just saw signs of that early on, even before he was hinting at it. He just had that look and that demeanor. I didn't know that he'd be this good. His, deadpan delivery of his time in prison. I don't think it'll ever get old. He can do this 6 years from now, and I think it'll still be entertaining. So yeah, I like it. Javier, what's your journey been as far as this goes?
Yeah, I was up there early with you on that. I think the best thing, the most interesting thing about the Dominic character is the fact that he has deficiencies, but they're using that as positives for the characters he's playing.
Elaborate on that.
Like his delivery, like his delivery of the lines, that's kind of like, you know, he has like this tone, but it works for what he's doing, where he's like, because he's not like, you know, like his verbiosity is not like what you see, like, you know, someone who's been doing it for a long period of time. But, you know, because of who he is and the character he's obviously playing someone who's like way more advanced than he is. And the thing is that he's really not that. So he's not that advanced. So it works. So all that stuff is his, you know, the fact that, you know, his relative newness and rawness is working really well with this character who is fronting and, you know, eventually always has to have, you know, mommy come and bail him out.
Very good. Mike, back to you.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the Firefly Funhouse, too. I thought that interesting. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I mean, I know some people are hating on these two matches, Bobby and Bray and Amos versus Brock, but I'm intrigued, Wade, like you, with these matches. And just like you said with Brock and Amos, like, you know, I'm interested in that match because, like, I want to see how it's laid out. And it's a test for Amos, too, like if he can go against someone like Brock. And I want to see how they lay the match out and, like, if Brock just destroys them and, like, or do they go 50-50. And I'd like to see, an F5 in that match. You know, that would look – there's some cool visuals we can get out of that match. So I know some people hate that match, but I think we can get a lot
Match. Yeah, there's people way overreacting to this. Brock Lesnar doesn't have an obvious dream match for WrestleMania this year. His matches are, you know, short and to the point. It's not like they're taking away an 18 or 24 minute classic that Brock's going to agree to do against, you know, Gunther or something. That match isn't ripe yet. And that when the time comes, I hope we get it. And I hope they go long. And I hope it's a statement match from Brock. But this show, this lineup for WrestleMania is looking strong enough. They can do Brock and Omos,
yeah.
And it is going to appeal to a type of fan that a lot of people complaining about it don't want to admit is a big part of people who are selling out O2 Arena and filling up stadiums for WWE's big shows. You can't do a lot of them, and it shouldn't be primarily what Brock does, but they've protected Omos just enough and made a big deal out of his size. And I know people are angry that I'm saying this and, you know, in a qualified way defending it, but I just don't think there was like anything else. In a way, I almost feel like anybody else would have been wasted against Brock because Brock's going to plow through them. Unless you're Roman Reigns, Brock kind of, or I guess Lashley to an extent, you know, Brock is going to plow through you. So just, I mean, I don't know. Javier, how do you feel? Like, do you feel there's a lost match out there? Or can we just do this 5 minutes you know, bell to bell, give or take 3 minutes. Omos Brock spectacle, and consider it a bit of a WrestleMania moment, and understand there's going to be 3 more hours of entertainment that night and another 3+ hours the next night of matches that feel more ripe and deserve more time.
The only match I would like to, I mean, that I think would work for Brock would have been Gunther, but it looks like he's going to be embarking on the against Drew McIntyre. And Drew McIntyre is a more important, would be more important than Brock Lesnar, because Brock Lesnar is a special attraction. And having, and it depends on how that almost thing goes. I don't think almost beats Brock, because that would be, you know, crowning almost into something that I don't think, you know, I'm not as negative as, you know, a lot of people, because I think he's fine in the role that he's in. I don't think, you know, but you know, beating Brock would be like a step too far. But like Brock, a 50-50 match would be interesting, or if Brock just beats him and essentially just, because, you know, Brock has lost a lot. And by beating Almost, who's, you know, just take the equity that they've built in Almost for, you know, what he's done. If you're not going to give it to someone like, Ali, for example, and you don't have someone that you're going to, you know, that is like the guy that you want to make by beating Almost, you could also use it to rehabilitate the losses that Brock has taken. So I'm fine with the match overall with what they're doing. With the caveat that I would have preferred to see Brock versus Gunther, obviously.
But isn't it too soon for Brock Gunther, though?
Where we are now, yeah. This, obviously we had a time machine, you know, start building it like,
gotcha.
You know, yeah. Already. And they did have that moment in Royal Rumble 2, at the Royal Rumble 2, so.
Yeah. Yep. I'm at peace with this, and I just don't think Brock is, like, he's not the best bout machine. He's a spectacle guy, and there's, you know, a number of wrestlers he's either plowed through already or should be saved for when it can be more of a spotlighted match.
Yeah.
Some just can't take his suplexes on their neck, like a Sheamus type probably doesn't want to deal with that. And, you know, if you want Brock against Drew someday, like, don't rush it. Don't put it on where it's going to be the 5th most important match on the night, you know, just let Brock have a quick spectacle match there's plenty of other matches that are going to fill these shows out. I think if they had a really weak lineup and they were going with a great opponent for Brock and move them to a weaker match, that's one thing, but I don't know. Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I'm not like excited about the match, but as Mike said, I've expressed, I'm intrigued with what they do, and have Brock plow through Omos, or do they go a little, you know, back and forth and, you know, I don't know. I mean, but Omos has not shown that he's coming along fast enough where I think you want to have like an Undertaker streak ending moment where Omos beats Brock and everyone's jaws are dropped. I'm not an advocate for that. I don't think they're considering that. And when I say I'm intrigued, I don't even really have that in the realm of possibility. But is he competitive? How does it end? Or is it just a squash and then they give him his walking papers or send him to NXT to feud with Bron Breakker or something afterwards? That we'll see. Go ahead, Mike. Anything else you want to add before we move on? I do want to get to other callers here.
Yeah, but touch on Bobby and Bray. I feel the same. Like, that's a fresh match. I'm more into that match than I was the Lights Out match. Like, to be honest, I wasn't all excited about that Lights Out match at the Rumble. I didn't have high expectations of it. It was no better than what I thought it was, outside of that good spot with at the end there with Uncle Howdy. But outside of that, you know, I'm looking forward more to Bobby and Bray. And I don't know if I want to see Bobby in a weird magic match or anything like that. I don't know if I want a lot of magic, you know, with Bobby Lashley. So I don't know if they should add a gimmick.
Right.
But what do you guys think? Should they just go like one-on-one? And what do you think? I mean, I think Bray can actually go in the ring if given the time with the right opponent. He's had good matches with Daniel Bryan, Dean Ambrose. He's just got to be given the time. I think he's underrated in the ring, actually. What do you guys think?
Boy, I'd like to think Bray is underrated in the ring, but he needs to have a performance that reminds us of that more often. Javier, the chemistry maybe. Well, there's chemistry is an issue, but like, what story do they tell with Bobby and Bray? And do you think it's just absolutely at this point a given it's Bobby and Bray, or is there some variation of that, a third person, or Uncle Howdy gets involved, or the Brock Omos thing turns into a squash on TV, and then Brock and Lashley team up against Uncle Howdy and Bray? I mean, whatever. I mean, different things have been batted around. But if it is Bray Lashley, who's the babyface, who's the heel, and how do they tell the story?
Well, there's been a lot of scuttlebutt about the reunion of some version of Hurt Business. And the one thing, like, the stuff that we saw from the Firefly Funhouse was just extremely weird. And I'm going to have to go back and watch it a few times to see how much I can glean from it.
Yeah.
You know, but, I mean, my first impression is I think they might be talking about introducing another character to join Uncle Howdy, because he mentioned, you know, who opened the door. And it's just so this might be the introduction of the big guy that we've seen, you know, with, you know, the full group, which makes me think, like, maybe like Redbeard, and then Redbeard being Rowan, being a big guy to face off against Lashley. And I think it's going to be more of a, might end up being like a group thing, like, you know, Howdy, somebody else, and Bray Wyatt against whatever version of Hurt Business. Because I don't think it's a given that's going to be Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander. And so some sort of thing. I think there's more to go before we find out exactly what's going on. It is a weird, you know, like, how it's like trying to put a round peg in a square hole. It is a weird a grouping of two different, very different kind of personalities. And I am intrigued in how they get from point A to point B, you know, as they build the story.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Cool. All right. Mike, appreciate the call. Good to hear from you again. Let's go next to Jay in Michigan. Jay, welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight? Just kidding. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight, Jay? Jay, are you there? Are you muted? Should we go back to you later? Javier, you can hear me, right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, well.
You might have thrown him off when you said Raw.
Hopefully not. All right, Jay, we'll try you back in a minute. Let's go to Brad in Florida next. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown?
Hey, guys. I hope you can get Jay back on. I really like his calls. And I'm actually going to my first NXT on Tuesday night. I'm really excited. I'm really looking forward to that. I've never been, you know, to an NXT or to the performance. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that, man.
Hey, let me – Brad, have you talked or emailed Kelly Wells and Company about calling up their live post show afterwards?
No, for sure.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit.
I'll do that for sure. Yeah, no, you got me.
Yeah. Email them or email me, and I'll connect you guys, because I'm sure they'd love to talk to you about that experience.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah, I'll be super quick, but I was really disappointed that LA Knight had to lose to Kofi Kingston tonight. He comes on, you know, people are yaying in the crowd, and, you know, doing all LA Knight shtick, for lack of a better word, and, you know, everyone seems to, you know, enjoy his promo, and he does a great job with it. And why do you guys have any idea why, like, what sense it makes to have Kofi Kingston win, other than like a feel good moment for 2 seconds for that crowd there? And I mean, what was the point of that?
Javier, we're at a point where people want Kofi to lose to LA Knight. I mean, I think we are. and how did you feel about that finish, given, like, because LA Knight seems like someone who hasn't been defined down yet. I did not expect him to be anything but an upper mid-card loudmouth. I think some people are seeing him as maybe more than that, and I'm opening my mind up to that possibility. Does losing to Kofi define him down, or if he beat Kofi, is that going to get people angry at Kofi being disrespected by a mid-card loudmouth dude? Where it's sort of a no-win situation. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, those were my questions, was what is the purpose of this match, and what is the purpose of this finish? The only thing I can think of is if the only way this would make sense and worth our time would be if the idea here is to continue a feud between LA Knight and either Kofi, Xavier, or LA Knight and somebody else in a tag team kind of situation, and the feud is going to continue. In that case, that makes sense, with Knight wanting to get his win back and being, you know, embarrassed or upset at losing. In that case, that would make sense. Or if this is going to be to launch Kofi into something else, like, you know, challenging for the Intercontinental Championship or something, if you're going to, you know, use this as when to catapult him forward. But as it stands, just them just having just this be a one-off match out of the blue, just because we had to fill in time, which is at this moment what it feels like, I think that is a waste of LA Knight. I think it would have been better I don't know what, because I know Xavier Woods had been injured for a bit. I don't know if he was cleared. I that would have been a better position for him. This would have been one of those cases where, like, it would have been fine if Knight getting a slip on the banana peel win over Kofi. But yeah, this is just, and keep in mind that LA Knight did lose because of outside interference that, granted, he brought upon himself when he hit Xavier Woods. So he was somewhat protected, but yeah, just really weird. Really weird booking, and I got to see what the next step is. And if there is no next step, then I think it was really bad.
I didn't mind it nearly as much. And I actually thought the interplay about the importance of WrestleMania and LA Knight wanting a spot at WrestleMania and they should roll out the red carpet and WrestleMania in LA needs LA Knight. It made him appearing at his first WrestleMania seem like a big deal. Like it being, I think WWE is successful. And you know, there's some eye rolling about, you know, John Cena lamenting, oh, I've hit a bump in the road. There's no place for me at Mania and all of that. But the collective story that collectively, when they tell those stories, it makes, even if it's a bit of a mirage, it makes getting onto WrestleMania feel like an achievement in and of itself. And this emphasized that. And LA Knight got to be heelish and dismissive of Kofi Mania, and so Xavier got to stand up for him. I didn't think the match felt is random. It felt like two acts crossing paths. This new loudmouth and these mainstay. I mean, say what you want, New Day's act being a little stale and obnoxious and all that, but they're popular still and a mainstay in that company. And seeing LA, Kofi and Xavier felt like a sensible, logical, among many options, a sensible, logical direction to go. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just referring mainly to the finish and what that tells you, what's going forward. I did enjoy the stuff that LA Knight said. I, as a matter of fact, made a note to say that him saying that I don't do this for WrestleMania moments, I do it for the money, would be like, I bet you Todd really liked that line.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not about moments. It's about, you know, being the top guy. I thought that was great. And also, like, you know, having them cross paths, because Kofi is a tenured guy, an important guy. It's just like how, you know, how it ends and how it ended really, like, begs for a follow-up to continue. And I'm hoping that there is, because, otherwise, you know, him losing in the way that he did, particularly since he just lost to Bray Wyatt. So, you know, you would expect him to get a bounce back win again, unless the follow-up is also that he loses a bunch of matches and has to, you know, rediscover himself, kind of like what was happening to Theory. I don't think that's what it is, but, you know, I think there's follow-up. I think this is just, you know, one part of a thing, you know, part A of something.
Yeah. Yep. Brad, back to you.
Yeah. And the other thing is just about Santos Escobar. Like, is he turning, is he good now that he's, like, aligned with Rey Mysterio? Like, what do you think that this is about? Like, Legado, you know, the group hasn't been there with him the last few weeks. He traded the mask with Rey, I think, last week. This week he comes out and says how much he respects him, and he's standing up to Dominic and Rhea alongside Rey. Like, what do you think that's about, and do you see any path for, I guess they can make a path at any time, but for Santos to do something significant at WrestleMania, and are they kind of forming something here? I can't imagine what it could possibly be. Maybe you guys have an idea.
I am intrigued by this, too. I didn't see it coming. I'm not sure what they're doing, and I think it's open for both interpretations, that Rey's trusting a snake, a scorpion, somebody he can't trust, who's going to act trustworthy, but, you know, he's shown himself not, you know, to be a heel in the past with that personality, or this is a complete switch around, and they want him to be a healthy, younger follow-up to whatever happens with Rey and Dominic, where Santos Escobar ends up maybe feuding with Dominic as a babyface, and they see him as a potential different kind of I guess, follow-up to Rey as a top, kind of top, potentially top-level, undersized Hispanic babyface. Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, my gut reaction is that this was a pivot to whatever they were doing with planning on doing with Santos, if anything, because when the moment of the switching of the mask went viral, and that got a lot of play, and a lot of people were saying, you know, this is one of the greatest moments we wish we could see on the show, and then they put it on the show the following week. So I think that ultimately that might have been a pivot, because particularly when you watch that segment of them exchanging masks, Santos said something along the lines of, I'm still a bad guy, but I respect you, kind of thing. So he could, you know, because he knew it was like a babyface exchange, but he's saying, look, you know, I'm coming for your legacy, you know, because legacy is important to me. And I'm like, I respect your legacy. I'm going to come for it. But it felt more in a sporting kind of thing. Like, I'm, but still saying that I'm going to be your rival. So in that, but then him coming to defend him tonight kind of felt more towards the babyface side, coming to Rey's defense. So, I mean, I'm for it. I don't want to see him like a pure, like, white meat babyface, like what a Rey is. I think it's important for him to keep like a sense of danger. Someone who's like, essentially what his namesake is, you know, Escobar, you know, where the idea is that, you know, Pablo Escobar did horrible, horrible things, but for his community, he invested money in his community. So the people in his community loved him, even though he was like, you know, horrible. So, you know, that kind of thing is like one of the few ways Shades of Grey works, where, you know, he's respects the legacy and he protects the legacy against everybody, whether babyfaces or so. I don't want him to become like a pure white meat babyface, but I mean, you know, the name of the group is Legado del Fantasma, which is, you know, Legacy of the Phantasm, and so it fits with the Rey legacy and all that stuff. I kind of wish that they brought Humberto Garza, who's you know, part of the Garza family, also a legacy wrestler, and Angel Garza, and Humberto is also part of the family too. Korea is also part of the family also. Because I like the idea of legacy. I've always been intrigued by the idea of, you know, multiple generations of wrestlers. And when you have Dominic as being the guy who's thumbing his nose, yet another reason why I, knowing this is a work, want to put my hands on Dominic. So
yes, totally. All right, Brad, back to you for anything else.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could think of is maybe Santos will be ringside with Rey for that match with Dom, and, you know, maybe Judgment Day, he takes out Judgment Day supporting Dom during it, or, you know, something kind of like that, who knows. But I really think Santos is great, and honestly, I thought it was a pretty non-eventful, like, episode. Like, you know, like Javier said, like, the Funhouse thing, to me, was very bizarre. It made no sense. It really made no sense to me. None. And, you know, and the main event thing with Jimmy, it's interesting, but it's not really like anything happened. I think next week is where it happens. So, guys, again, thank you for taking the call, and have a good evening. I'll let you get, hopefully, to Jay and some other people.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. All right. Let's we'll try Jay again here. Jay, are you available now? Hello, Jay. All right. Well, give us a call back if you want to be part of the show. We will move instead to Jordan calling from Kentucky. Jordan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Wade, Javier, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. What's on your mind about the
Okay. All right. Well, we were at the show tonight, and first of all, guy said earlier it was about 70 or 80% sold out. We picked up our tickets at Will Call, and the guy in front of us, they were trying to get tickets. The show was actually sold out. The empty seats were people going to the bathroom and getting concessions and beer and stuff, because Evansville is a notoriously sleepy town for events. So, you know, for wrestling events, they're not going to scream and yell and be, you know, rambunctious like for other towns. We were in Lexington for AEW, the Jay Briscoe tribute show, And, you know, it was electric there. So Evansville's a pretty sleepy town. I just wanted to bring that up. And Evansville's also a place where it's not a big town. It's one of the smaller venues. So, you know, we show up when we're hoping to see the big stars. And you know you're going to get the bloodline at the end, that angle. But, you know, all the guys that I wanted to see, the Sheamus, the Drew McIntyre, the Braun Strowman, I love Ricochet, you know, the dude that's the with Imperium, you know, you get those guys all at the very beginning with the Viking Raiders all coming out so they can get out of town, you know. And that's, you know, that's the way they use Evansville, and I understand it, but I just want to let you guys know that when the crowd comes across on TV kind of dead, it's usually kind of dead.
Very good. Anything, any reaction to the content of the show itself tonight?
A little disappointed. We enjoyed the big stars, you know. I mean, Dominic is a funny heel. I really enjoy the aspect that he went to, he did hard time and went to lock up overnight. That's hilarious. But, you know, I enjoyed seeing the Queen. I enjoyed seeing Ronda Rousey. But I wanted to see him in a match. So that was disappointing. You know, I loved seeing Rey Mysterio. Didn't want to see him get beat by Karrion Kross, you know, even though there was the angle with Dom, which everybody was really, really hoping. You know, they were really egging on Rey to hit him. And, you know, eventually it's going to happen, so everybody's looking forward to it. And, hey, that's about all I got for you guys. I'll let you get on with your night.
All right. Cool. Thanks, Jordan.
All
glad
right,
you
guys.
Checked in. Interesting perspective.
Have a good one. Yeah, see
you. You too, yep. We'll keep rolling here, and we'll go to Grant in Detroit next. Grant, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Okay, so normally I don't have a lot of complaints about SmackDown, but this just was not a good show. Like, if this show was booked by Tony Khan or even Vince McMahon, like, I'm sure people would be complaining about the show. Like, both of those women's segments were terrible. Like, you advertise Rhea coming to SmackDown just to have her come out and stare at Charlotte. Like, what? That was terrible. Natalya, who normally gets a decent match out of people, that whole match with Shayna was clunky and not good. And like the if you don't have the bloodline on that show would not be been good and watchable at all. Like you have Karrion Kross, who might not even be booked on WrestleMania, beat Rey Mysterio. Like that Bray Wyatt segment, don't even get me started on that. That was. I don't even know what that was. Like, I don't know. Did you all like this show?
I liked this show way more than you did. And I thought Ripley not doing all the talking and Dominic doing the talking was good. I thought adding Tegan Knox with Natalya to set up a tag match next week was well done. I think Ronda's an effective heel. I agree with you. The match was clunky. It was pretty short. It didn't amount to much. But, yeah, I don't know quite what went wrong there. But Rey Mysterio, Karrion Kross, they've been building it up for a while for this moment so they could pivot. And Kross should be beating Rey. Rey's not a guy who needs wins. And they gave him they don't need to do it, but they gave him an excuse, you know, because Dominic interfered and, you know, got in his head. But, I mean, Kross, they're building up. And Rey, people are going to love whether he wins or loses a TV match. And again, this was a payoff to, it feels like, a month-long storyline at this point. The closing segment was enough to make the show a thumbs up. I thought it, unlike what Jordan said, I really thought it was significant developments here. And having said event and the segments leading up to it backstage with Jimmy and Heyman and Solo worked. And I think the opening match was a good 18 minutes. I thought LA Knight was I obviously like the LA Knight New Day segment more than some others, but LA Knight got to flex on the microphone and have a good 13-minute match with Kofi. Firefly Funhouse thing.
That was another thing. I forgot about that. They had Kofi beat LA Knight. Why? Like, what purpose did that serve?
Well, in the way WWE frames things, Xavier distracted LA Knight with a trombone noise, and then he got blindsided. So it's not like they just squashed LA Knight. In the way that WWE tells their stories, this was a tainted win, and LA Knight's going to want revenge. But, I mean, LA Knight is not – he doesn't need to be protected like Karrion Kross or Gunther or anything like that. I mean, he can absorb a distraction loss and then talk his way back in. And, I mean, if Kofi – it just like was defined down to nothing. And I think if you lose to, again, LA Knight, if he overachieves, great, but he's a upper mid-card loudmouth and he's gonna make a lot of money and fill a lot of TV time doing that. He doesn't need to win. I'm kind of surprised at the sentiment that this was some sort of, you know, blow to LA Knight. You know, he's gonna be fine. Javier, chime in.
Yeah, well, for the first half of the show, I did find it fine. It was pretty much what I wrote for every single segment. Everything was like fine. So it wasn't super high, super low. The show basically to me was about two things, and that was Dominic Mysterio and the Bloodline segment. Those were your two biggest moments. I thought those two were great. Dominic being just the absolute worst, and he was involved in two storylines. He was involved in the Charlotte thing, and he was involved in Bray Wyatt, in the Karrion Kross Rey Mysterio thing. So that's the high points for me were good. Low points were okay. I thought there were more low points in general. And if you're looking at that point, I could understand that point of view. But in terms of what I mentioned about the LA Knight thing is just. It's too early to tell for me personally without, you know, there being a follow-up. If there's no follow-up, then I'd be a little bit more negative on it because I think that would have a bigger, you know, upside. I wouldn't have him lose like this soon after in this situation without a follow-up. And there's, like I said, you know, so wait until that. Overall, I thought it was okay. I did find that the match with Natalya and Shayna Baszler really clunky too. I was actually wondering if maybe whatever injury Natalya said she suffered is something that was just like, you know, still nagging. But I do like that it set up essentially a match for next week because this is long term. It's to make Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey credible by defeating Tegan Knox and Natalya, so then they can challenge for the tag team titles at WrestleMania against Lita and Becky.
All right. Well, that's why we do call-ins and have co-hosts get different opinions on things. I'll still argue. I thought the first half was better than just fine. I mean, I thought the opener was good. I thought the setup for Rey with Karrion Kross was good. LA Knight's mic work was good. I was not bothered by the finish of that match. And I guess from there it moved into Charlotte's ring entrance.
I think it was mainly because the first half, there was a lot of wrestling in that first half of the show.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, the first match I think was 18 minutes. So it was a lot and it was not much happening. It felt like it was more back, you know, story and happening wise, I think it was more back ended. I'm not saying the first half was bad. It's just like, it was fine. It was good. It was okay. But like,
Yep. Well, very good. Well, Grant, I'll throw it back to you. I had a lot to say. Javier had something to say. You can follow up or bring something else up if you'd like.
I see where you're coming from, but I just don't know. I don't think it was good. And then the LA Knight thing kind of bothered me because if you notice, like, LA Knight is, like, organically getting over. Like, he probably came out of that Bray Wyatt feud better than Bray Wyatt did. So just to beat him just because for Kofi, who you're not doing anything with, it just didn't seem to make sense to me. But I don't know. You might see a difference.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's the beginning. So if there is follow-up, then it'll be better. Because if this leads to LA Knight doing something much more meaningful, then, you know, it's a good first step. But I think that's the best perspective to take. Because it was just the first thing, and usually WWE has, like, multiple days. But if this is just to say, hey, this guy is, like, on this level and Kofi's on this higher level, then in that case, that would be where I would be like, okay, we got a problem here.
Yeah, and keep in mind, you can argue against this approach, but WWE signals to fans if someone is a level lower than someone or not. And when you have Xavier distracting LA Knight, they're saying he's not a level lower. It's just, in this case, the babyface has created a distraction that showed up this, you know, bombastic, loudmouth, easily distracted heel, and he paid a price. It's not defining him down. Based on the way that they book and the messages that they try to send to viewers via the way they book.
Example, first match, the way Madcap Moss took the pin.
Yes, exactly. Yep. And there's a logic to that because, you know, either he's going to be a heel or they're building up a storyline where, as Todd suggested, I hate when I do this, when I can't remember who said it, that Emma might turn on Madcap because why Todd else would...
Bad.
Yeah, good, okay. Because, you know, she keeps supporting him and he keeps losing. So, you know, when there's often reasons for losses and types of losses, and they have their method of telling those stories. And I mean, not everybody loves them and they're not perfect, but I'm just acknowledging that that's a fact that Moss losing the way he did isn't a burial either. It could be part of an ongoing storyline. It also could be we're not anywhere near ready to push him yet. We still believe in him, and 9 months when we start pushing him, you're not going to remember this happened, but it's the right thing to do tonight because it's, you know, we need a finish, and we don't want either of the other two to lose. Grant, anything else?
No, that's all I have for you all tonight. Y'all enjoy the rest of the callers.
Cool.
You know, I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Grant. All right, we have emails flowing. I will get to a call next, but I do want to thank somebody who emailed a link, and I didn't know this was out there, but I'm happy it is. There is a WWE-produced 60-minute YouTube video recapping the Bloodline storyline, 62 minutes and 43 seconds to be exact, with 2.4 million views already. That was posted 3 weeks ago. The WWE tagline is watch the full history of Sami Zayn and the Bloodline from his first acknowledgement of Roman Reigns to the heartbreaking end of the Royal Rumble 2023. So I'm not shocked it's out there. I wouldn't have been shocked if it wasn't, but I'm glad it was, and it's had millions of views. So, go watch it, people. Should be easy to find on YouTube Bloodline Sami storyline. All right, so we'll get to the other emails in a bit. But first we will take our calls here and we'll go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome. Good to hear from you. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Well, first, you guys chewed on a lot. And secondly, I will say this is a first. This is the first time I'm on with the two main men, Wade and Javier, both. Like, I am in awe right now. I'm in heaven right now. I don't know what to say even. I mean, Javier, man, it's good to talk to both of y'all. How you doing?
Hermano, ¿cómo está? Brother, how are you? See, that gets really annoying when you do that. Spanish and English, just really annoying. But yeah, man. Great to talk to you, bud.
Yeah. And I will say, number one, and then I will say, I'm sad that Jay did not, that whatever happened to him, I'm very sad because he gave me one of the greatest compliments you could ever give someone, so I'm thankful for that. So I was sad he didn't get on, and Brad's one of the best. We have a bunch of great callers on here, so I'm always excited to hear their opinions. And you guys gave me a lot to chew on. Okay, so I wanted to go first to what you guys were just talking about as far as the LA Kofi, because, again, I was thinking about it when it happened. My first thought was, okay, I don't like it right off, only because – and Wade, you've said this, and I'm with you. I think now Jordan said on his when he was, you know, being there in person that the crowd's usually kind of dull. wait at it. They were not over tonight. They were not. Like, Kofi was really having to fight to get a lot of cheers. Like, that's the problem, the only issue I have with it. If the New Day was still super, super over and you're like, wow, this is great. Yes, they've been great for a long period of time, but their shelf life is over. It's done. And to me, you made a good point, which I didn't think about initially, of, yes, you have a loudmouth heel getting overcome by two babyfaces trying to get in his head. Like, yes, I get that. But I still don't want babyfaces interfering in a match for other babyfaces. I still don't like that in general. I know why they did it, and I get that point of it. But just let Kofi beat LA Knight. If you're going to do that, just do it. Don't do all this other stuff you got to do with Xavier being – Xavier's just – he's even worse than Kofi to me. Like, I just want them to be whatever they're going to be. But what do you have to say? What do you think about that part of it? Because I'm fine with it if they tell a good story, and it's fine. Whatever little story they're going to tell with it, I'm fine. Because LA Knight's still over. He's still doing fine. He'll be okay. He can get past it. But I just don't like – I just think New Day's not over enough to have this work. I just think they've evolved. It's gone too far. It's just it's done. It's not good anymore in my book. And so that's where I kind of have the only issue with the segment altogether.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I have some affinity for Kofi as a talent, and you know, the whole journey that he's been on, and I just think he's a decent, solid person to cross paths with LA Knight. Now that LA Knight's moved past Bray Wyatt, I'm not at all going to disagree with you or push back on New Day feeling stale, but you know, I didn't notice the crowd not being into them, and then having to work especially hard for cheers either way. But, you know, it there's going to be weeks where that happens. Most of the time, it seems like there's still a lot of a certain type of fan attending WWE shows who are into New Day doing their thing. They're oftentimes, as you know, if you listen a lot, baffles me because I think they're pretty obnoxious and have go away heat and have for a while. But I thought this was on the lower end of them being displaying the traits that I am really tired of. But mostly I just don't think it's all a front to have LA Knight lose to Kofi. Kofi is Kofi. Like, the gimmick sucks. Or, you know, the gimmick is I'm way past being into it, and I think it's obnoxious and off-putting to a significant part of the fan base. But Kofi still is talented, and I just don't think there's any shame in losing to him. I don't even think it defines you down that much, especially with the interference aspect. And, you know, yes, baby faces shouldn't distract heels, but LA Knight was such a jerk to Xavier and hit him from behind and making comments about the trombone. And while I'm cheering for that, that's still a heel of his tone was heelish. Javier, what do you think?
Yeah. As far as like the New Day's presentation, when they came out, I wrote, this is fine. New Day was only a 6 on the annoying scale. So I agree,
right.
They weren't as annoying as usual. But then during the match, that got Xavier Woods bumped up to a 7. So, you know, but we're still okay. But yeah, I mean, but the thing, you know, when the first confrontation, you know, when LA Knight came out, this is pretty much my frame of thinking. When LA Knight comes out, I'm like, okay, so he hasn't been really doing anything. Who's going to come out? What's going to be his next program? And out came Kofi and Xavier. And I'm like, okay, well, are they going to be doing a tag team thing? But then when I saw that, you know, they had the good back and forth, and I'm like, okay, Kofi is going to, you know, this will be a good win for LA Knight. You know, Kofi is an established guy.
Right.
This will, you know, give LA Knight some stuff. And then, like, you know, the match happens, and the way that he lost, I'm like, okay, well, maybe this means that LA Knight's going to have to bring in somebody else to even things out, because, you know, this was a 2-on-1. This was essentially a 2-on-1, two baby faces against the one guy. Yeah, he had it coming because he was, you know, beating up Kofi in front of Xavier Woods, and you know, so psychologically it made sense why this would happen the way it did. But then ultimately, you know, him losing, there needs to be another thing, because otherwise, and I'll give Triple H a lot of credit. A lot of the people that he's brought back and he's been putting out, there's some people that are there just to lose. You know, Elias, apparently Hit Row now. You know, and because these people exist in order to elevate other talent. sometimes we don't know where they fit. I put Santos Escobar in one of those. I put in that category, plus the rest of the Legado del Fantasma. I put LA Knight. I don't know how where LA Knight fits. And so I can understand the resistance, which because I feel it, that him losing to Kofi is saying, okay, Kofi, he's like a lower level than Kofi. But I don't think this is the end. So, you know, that's why I'm hesitant. I have the same initial reaction, which is why I was kind of negative towards that for, you know, I'm kind of a little bit towards the negative, but I'm not going to sell his stock yet. Let's put it that way. I'm not going to sell LA Knight's stock
yet.
I'm going to wait to see how he rebounds in the next week.
Yeah,
very good. Anything else? Sean, what else have you got for us?
Yeah, I've got a few. Well, the thing I want to say, Wade, is I was actually listening to the SmackDown 5 years ago, because I love listening to the 5 years ago, because I just think they're always fun to look back at. But, and Wade, I was always with you on this. They were always they were so bad about not saying the city. At least the city's on there, and they actually say it every once in a while, which WWE, thank God they have gotten better about that. Paul Levesque's gotten a lot better about that. So I'm thankful to see that. And the other segment I was going to kind of talk about, which you guys have already brought up, but I wanted to kind of put my two cents in, if that's okay, was I think with the Charlotte – because I thought the same thing. When they first said Charlotte and Rhea all day, like face-to-face, you know, I do get kind of disappointed where it's like initially, like, I want to see that. And then, you know, it doesn't happen. I get where people are disappointed by it. But it was better to me because Dom is such a good heel. It just made it work. It was just so good them going back and forth. But my – so I liked the overall segment, and then Rhea and Charlotte did eventually get face-to-face, even if it was for a second. But I wanted to talk about the Charlotte aspect of it, because we've been talking about it, and, I mean, it's still another week. I guess it's only one more week, and we still got plenty of time to build, you know, to the match itself and all that. I'm still not liking Charlotte in the face role. I'm still not enjoying it yet. I still think she just has that heel persona about her. I know she's trying to do better. And so I get that. I think she's really trying. I really do think she's trying. And she's, you know, brought up because it always goes back, and there's always those parts where they go back to her dad, and I wish she'd be able to get out of her dad's shadow, but she can't because she's Ric Flair's daughter, and that's kind of just – she is what she is. And I know it's hard to get past that perspective and that from that area, but I just wish they would. I mean, Dominic did a great job because he's so good at saying, you know, how all this stuff about her dad. But how do you think she's doing as a face? Do you think, again, like leading into the match, that they'll be fine telling the Rhea heel winning over Charlotte face, assuming Rhea's going to win, which I think she kind of has to at this point just because she's so over and she's doing such a good job. And I think if she loses to Charlotte again, I think that just really crushes. That's where you're defined down in a way. I think that's where it crushes you because, yeah, you can say I lost to Charlotte, you know, whatever, but you've already lost to Charlotte. And your whole point about coming back and being better and getting over it this time is to beat her this time. So what do you think about Charlotte's overall, what she's doing as a face? Do you think it's gotten better? Do you think it can get – be fine over the long term? Where do you think they're going with that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't – she's a better heel than a face. I mean, for sure. I feel like I'm more – I'm higher on her current babyface persona than most because I think her babyface persona is I'm really good, but I'm going to be less boastful and self-centered about it, and I'm going to watch these – loudmouth up-and-comers who aren't at my level, as she puts it, try to take me down. And with dignity and class and confidence without cockiness, I'm going to go out there and be the class of this division. I'm okay with that. I don't need her. I mean, she's not talking robotically. She doesn't sound like overly scripted compared to the past. And she's just carrying herself like this veteran alpha who's proven herself, and she doesn't need to get super worked up, and she can kind of just smile and take in these, again, up-and-coming, bombastic, loudmouth heels and be more dignified and move on to victory. I think that's her character now, and I'm okay with that. I think for her playing a babyface role, I'm not sure there's another role that would fit and and ring true. And this seems to fit and ring true to me. So I'm, yeah, like I said, I'm pretty okay with this. But I do sense I'm probably in the minority. Javier, how about you?
Yeah, I don't hate it like some people. I think this is about the best you're going to get as her as a babyface on a WWE programming. I think the only way that she works truly as a babyface, if it were more of a sports-oriented promotion, like on a New Japan kind of thing, where it's more like, you know, where what you're describing, Wade, would get more over as a babyface. That's essentially what Okada in New Japan is. And when he gets involved more in storylines, he comes up across as more dickish or more heelish, you know, because it's just his natural inclination. You know, and I think that's her natural inclination too. So when she's sticking to just the sports part of it, it's good enough. But the problem is that when you sit and do like a long, you have to talk people into the match, I think that's where she ends up losing some people. Although she's gotten a lot better than that in that, because, you know, she sounds less scripted. And I think I thought this moment was good by putting Dominic there, because Dominic is like one of the top heels in the company that's going to get booed.
Yeah.
And by and by comparison, you know, she's going to get, but notice that the moment that Rhea Ripley came out, everybody was cheering for Rhea Ripley. Now, when they got face to face, the people, you know, shifted and did what they were supposed to, because they played along with it, because they're at least enjoying the character and they're respecting the character to boo Ripley when, you know, they got in the face to face. But, you know, there's still that moment of, you know, and too late to do it now, but and you know, with the other stuff that's going on, but in a perfect world, you would have already had Ripley start turning babyface and have Charlotte in the heel role. I think that would be in a perfect world, but where we're at now, this is, you know, it's okay, but I think it could have been better the other way around. But I'm not gonna like crucify what's going on now.
Sean, what else?
Yeah, and then I just wanted to go back to the beginning as far as, you know, then starting to build up the Gunther-Drew match. I'm sold on that. Tell me a little story up to it. I'm fine. I'm at the point now with Drew where I still, you know, love him, but, you know, Gunther's going to beat him, and he should, and I'm totally fine with it. I love Gunther even more right now, so they're on a good trajectory there. And the end of the show was great. I mean, Sammy just explained it really well. I mean, him and Sammy had great chemistry, I think, in what they were saying. I just think it went really well. And Wade, you know, like I said, I appreciate all you do. I'm excited for this WrestleMania season coming up. And Javier, you're the man. It's always good to get to talk to you both. Thanks for taking my call, as always.
Great. Thanks, Sean. Always good talking to you, too. All right, cool. Well, go next to Deke in Michigan. Deke, been a while since we talked to you, too. Welcome back. What's on your mind tonight about SmackDown?
Hey, guys, yeah, man, I don't think I've called about WWE, like, maybe ever. I'm not quite sure.
I was thinking that, yeah.
But, yeah, I probably should call more about it, but I got to say, wait, I'm always with you 1,000%. I think you're way off on this one with LA Knight. I think it's all been explained already, but outside of this guy's brand new to people, and people somehow like him, and you could – all of my friends – for a month or however long he's been around, are like, I like this guy. I like this guy. Who is this guy? Because you got to remember, people don't watch NWA. A lot of people don't watch NXT. They don't know who this guy is. And they see him, and they like him. And he was made to look like a fool against Bray Wyatt, and now he loses to Kofi. And this is not 2009 Kofi. This is not Kofi jumping out of Madison Square Garden's second deck. This isn't even Kofi Mania Kofi. This is NXT Kofi. He literally was just on NXT for the last few months. So, and a loss by Kofi doesn't matter. And they're just like, really? He lost to this guy who loses all the time? Like, because Kofi loses all the time. And I just think it just didn't make sense. Like, I'm not mad at it. It just doesn't make any sense. And I really do think people like this guy, and they want to get behind him. Anyway, that's the point on that.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Bray Wyatt.
Just one more thing on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Javier. Well, real quick, my brother, for some reason, my brother does not like L.A. Knight. He says, oh, he's too derivative of The Rock and Stone Cold. And I'm like, well, I mean, you know, for some reason, I don't know. I've tried to turn my brother on that, but he does not like him, and it's weird. But, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I have one friend that says he's The Rock, and I don't get The Rock from him. I get Stone Cold from him because of the yeah. Oh, hell yeah. The yeah is literally Stone Cold. I would like him to stop doing that, but the guy can talk. I mean, he's great. Speaking of, though, Bray Wyatt. Who are the people that still like this guy? How is anybody still defending this guy? Honestly, like, do you have any clue who's behind this guy still? What is going on? It's not good. But I was told, now, Wade, for the last 5 years, I was told it was Vince's fault now. This is what I was told, Wade. And I'm still getting the garbage. Not by you, by everybody else. Well, not by you, by everybody else.
Yeah,
it was Vince's fault. He was holding him back, Wade. That's what I was told.
Javier, I'm going to throw you first on this. What say you?
Great deflection there, Wade. Well, I mean, I can tell you from the time he came back, I love the stuff they were doing in the beginning. I love the teasing. I love the way, you know, him showing up. All that was great stuff. Then we had the Mountain Dew match, and that was the whole cross. I'm sorry, Wade, I didn't mean to actually say the brand. We had the match. And, you know, and that was just all of a sudden what was a great personal, like, this dark place that we're going in the psyche of Bray Wyatt all of a sudden became this, you know, stupid, light thing going on. And then they didn't immediately follow up. Then he shows up and beats up a bunch of people. Right now, at this moment, I'm, like, waiting for them to actually set a direction. But yeah, I was disappointed on where it ended because of the stupid cross promotion. And then nothing has happened since, and I'm waiting to see what the next step is. The problem is that this is going to be a long-term storyline because I believe the Wyatt Six are six members. So you still have a lot of people that are going to have to be introduced slowly as this is going on. So at least that's my take anyway. But yeah, as of the Royal, you know, as of the Royal Rumble, right? Yeah. As of the Royal Rumble. Yeah. I've been kind of like, you know, since then there's nothing really been happening. So I'm waiting for the next chapter to start, but before that it was fine. And I love the Fiend stuff. So
yeah,
previous to that.
I wrote in my SmackDown report at pwtorch.com. More randomness that feels more about creating eerie feelings and disorientation than telling any kind of actual cohesive story. Everyone's waiting for that to be proven wrong and for all the flashes of imagery on the screen to somehow fall into place in a way where it's like, oh, okay, no one could have seen that coming, or even if you studied it, it would have been a stretch. But now I see how all this is sort of manifesting into something that makes sense. I'm still open to that possibility that, you know, a lot of this is just for the visual effect, but some of it is dropping clues that will, in retrospect, be seen as laying the groundwork for, you know, the Wyatt Six. Or, you know, I'm not fretting over it. It doesn't take up a ton of time. I don't I was going to say I don't disenjoy, but that's not phrase. I'm not irritated by the return to the Firefly Funhouse and Bray doing his thing. I thought him, like, sitting like at a production desk with an iPad looking at himself and the talk show format that led to coming up next. I thought it kept my attention. Ultimately, I think we have to be okay with it not making sense the way that some of us wanted to, and understand he's going for a vibe and getting people to react emotionally, even if they don't know what they're watching. And that might be okay and enough, for to serve a to have a positive influence on the WWE product. But it could end up being more than that too. Javier, anything you want to add? No,
Do you two remember Lost?
Yeah.
Yep.
Jake, you remember Lost? Okay. Lost is a similar thing where this is an idea that Abrams coined that it's essentially a mystery box, right? I think it was Abrams. that it's a mystery box. They basically built a storyline not knowing where it's going to play, but like they created this mystique around this thing. Whether it was what is the island or what is the ghost thing or what is the, inside the hatch. And you know, ultimately they didn't know. But then they opened it, and that led to another mystery, and that led to another mystery. The thing is that, like, so for people who you – 'cause this is to answer your question, Deke, of, you know, who's still into it. I'm still into the what's in the hatch. You know, you might have already, and a lot of people are like, you know, this is going nowhere every single time. It's like a onion and at the end there's never been anything. I understand that. I get that. I'm not there yet. So you may be there and while you're like tired of it, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up.
I'm in season
Javier,
one of Lost. You are already at the end of it.
Yes. And you
I didn't make it
lost?
To the end a lot, but go ahead.
Exactly. You know what they lost, Wade? They lost their audience.
That's what I'm saying.
That's
yeah.
what they lost.
Yes,
that's what they lost.
I understand.
And J.J. Abrams did the same thing with Star Wars, guys. They didn't have an end, by the end of it, everybody hates Star Wars now. This guy ruined Star Wars because he didn't have an end.
We literally could talk about it in an hour because I hate the idea of the mystery box in general. But you know, because my hope is that Bray Wyatt does actually ultimately have something in store for us. So I'm still excited for the potentiality. I haven't given up on it.
Well,
so I'm still
the people
still
that say the bloodline storyline. the people that say the bloodline storyline is taking too long. I mean, this must be the longest storyline in the history of the universe because I've been waiting for this guy to do anything for like 6 years. I mean, what are we doing? It's still nothing. I was at WrestleMania 33 with the maggots and the worms on the ring. Like, what are we doing? It's ridiculous. Like Hogan and Andre are like, wrap this up, guys. It's kind of ridiculous. It really is.
I think
last thing.
Yeah,
well,
I mean Bray
is
a victim of people's the Bray storyline is a victim of people's expectations and reasonable expectations that this isn't just a bunch of eerie, discombobulating imagery. That's meant to be intriguing, but disorient you, play off of nostalgia in a fever dream type way. And it ultimately might just be that. Bray's good enough as, you know, Wyndham Rotunda is good enough at performing it. And the music and the production work that goes, the elbow grease that goes into the production work is enough to keep me interested. Part of why I think I'm not frustrated is I don't labor over trying to piece everything together, and I'm just okay watching and waiting for it, you know, and if it just has this little pocket, like Lost is frustrating because I lost faith that they knew what they were doing or where they were going, and it got more complicated than I want my relaxing pastime to be to follow a plot. So I gave up on it, but when it's 3 minutes on a show that's 2 hours long and they take their time with it, I mean, I'm probably less frustrated because it's only a small little part of something larger, and I am not agonizing over or I don't say obsessing, that sounds judgmental, but yeah, obsessing over like, what does this mean? What does this mean? What does this mean all the time? I'm like, all right, that was fun, and I hope it turns into something, but if it doesn't, okay. I mostly just want Bray to have a good wrestling match when things come to a head.
Ultimately, that has kind of been the issue. It's that ultimately you've got to get it into the ring. And the problem is that when they try to convert a lot of that stuff into the ring, you end up with the maggots on the floor and stuff like that. And that, or the red light or the pitch black.
Big mallet.
That's the stuff they got to stop. The best match that he's ever had was The Fiend versus Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, and look at my primer from whenever that match happened, because I basically called it almost step by step what was going to happen in that match, and I thought that was the perfect telling of the story of what the Fiend was in that story. And I do disagree. The that first part of The Fiend from the start of the Firefly Funhouse to the Cena match, all that told one complete story. So they did have a full complete story in there. It was stuff that happened afterwards that was completely off the rails with the burning corpses and all that stuff. That was just, you know, crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's been some things that have gone off the rails where I don't think they'll be in the 60-minute recap of the Bray Wyatt journey if they have discretion over what gets included. All right, Deke, anything else?
Yeah, yeah. Have you – I got another point, but just real quick. Have you noticed, and they did it tonight, I think what you said, Wade, a second ago, his segments the last few weeks have been incredibly short, very short. They're just – he says something, and then they're done. So I think they're sensing it too, so they're keeping him short. Last thing, how does this Bloodline story end? Everybody's upset about Sammy and old Cody and all that whole thing. You know, I'm a guy who's, again, I'm Deacon, Michigan. I'm going to L.A. I bought my tickets in the pre-sale because we figured The Rock was going to be there. That's how this whole thing was going to end. I think that's why they sold 40,000 tickets to San Antonio to the Rumble the day it went on sale, because most people thought The Rock was going to be there. That's obviously not happening. If The Rock's not there, what the heck happens here? What are we doing? Because we're just kind of treading water now. And it is still interesting, and tonight the end was great. Sammy has been amazing. He gave this storyline new blood. Jay and Jimmy have been awesome. But what do we do?
Well, okay.
If The Rock
we're not treading water. This storyline will be great if Rock never is part of it. If he is part of it, he might derail it and ruin it, and he might make it the greatest storyline in wrestling history. Consensus view. There are different ways that this can go. Rock's a really talented performer, and he fits in the storyline great. And it would be wonderful if he's part of it. I am not saying to myself, and I don't think anyone should say, it's only worth it if he ultimately shows up. That's disrespectful to Jay and Jimmy and Sammy and Solo and Heyman and Roman and KO and everything else that's going on here. All that said, there's so many threads to pull in this. I mean, Solo Sikoa is just beginning to be explored as a major character. There is at some point a Solo Sammy one-on-one match that will be meaningful. There, that we may get a split of the Usos and Jay turns into the number one baby face in the company when Sammy cools off or moves to something else. Heyman could end up managing Gunther at some point or there's so many against a baby face Roman Reigns. Like there's so many places this can go, and having to choose is what's agonizing, I think, for them, because how do they pace it out to get the most out of everything, but also pace themselves out where they can get, you know, to everything that they are excited about that can all be done. I don't feel it's treading water, and I think there's a bunch more they can do, and there's not just one way this can end. I'm sure their goal in the end is for Solo to be a bigger star and Roman to have a hot babyface run and Heyman to be probably the antagonist, the Heenan to Hogan relationship with Roman at some point, and that they can get to it before Roman has other options or doesn't want to, you know, just doesn't want to do it anymore. And Jimmy and Jay are showing themselves to be multi-layered personalities. It was, Sean mentioned the 5 years and 10 years ago flashback shows. It was, I think 10 years ago, Jason Paul and I were talking about, oh, you've got to do more of them. They're so one-dimensional, and they show signs that they could be more than that, and it's happening now. I know they have lots of cards to play, and I think the pace is fine so far. And this is, I don't want to say just getting started, but, you know, this might be, we might be talking about the next two WrestleManias being Bloodline oriented headline matches, and it might not even stop there. Javier, how about you?
Yeah, well, the Rock wouldn't have been the final destination anyway. It would have just been a stop because Rock's not meeting Roman Reigns. It would have just been a major stop, but it would have been, you know, to continue from that point on. As a matter of fact, a lot of the speculation was that Roman Reigns was going to wrestle both nights of WrestleMania, The Rock on one night and Cody on the next one, likely to lose Cody on the second night. That's pretty much was the speculation going.
Yeah.
The question is who's going to get, because, you know, the thing is that Roman Reigns has built all this equity in the title, and who's going to get that? Who's going to get that when they beat him? You know, I thought that Drew, you know, to revisit old wounds. I thought that Drew could have been the guy back then. He's no longer the guy. Could it be Cody? If it's not Cody, do you go back to Sammy? Could you do Jay and fulfill, I think, was it Brandon LeClaire's dream, who's been calling for that and fulfill that? Or is it, or is it Solo who ultimately is there and betrays Roman Reigns and he takes it? Or do you, you know, Gunther's been built up strong. Could it be Gunther? Could it be Bron Breakker over, you know, coming over from SmackDown and you make him the main man? When he comes over, you know, let's say Roman Reigns holds it, he wins the next Royal Rumble and he's the one who dethrones him at the following WrestleMania. There's a lot of places that you can go, and you know, you have the interpersonal relationship amongst the rest of the group. That's what's keeping things interesting, where you may not, my biggest concern, and the reason I thought that Drew should have, not should have, let me phrase that, where I thought that Drew was a good option at the Castle pay-per-view was because I was assuming Roman Reigns was going to be gone until Royal Rumble. He wasn't, and while he had less dates, the Bloodline filled that role for him. So I think you could go on for 1 year. I think you're a little bit too ambitious with 2 years wide, but I think you could get into the next WrestleMania.
Well, let's remember this conversation in a year or two. See how we're doing.
Right.
God willing. I'm not... Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's likely that the next four WrestleManias are about the Bloodline, but I am not ruling it out. Like, I'm just saying, I'm not ruling out. Like, people who just think, oh, wrap this up, it's belaboring the point, or, you know, move on to other things. It's like, there's so many, and they could add, you know, they probably won't, but they could add, another player or two to the Bloodline. I don't know, you know, who obviously that would be, but yeah, no, I wouldn't rule out anything. I think this is, it hasn't been perfect, and I've been, you know, critical or you know, left wanting at times in certain respects, but I mean, overall, this has just been a brilliant and really fun addition to pro wrestling viewing for the past year.
But all right, if they're going along, they need to build some people up too, because we already reran Kevin Owens twice, and I don't want to see too many more reruns. You know, because
yeah,
he's pretty
right.
Gone through everybody. So you need to start bringing over people, building up people. And hey, look, you got Jay White possibly out there. You possibly have Kenny Omega. So there's still
yeah.
You know, things that could happen.
I would love to see Kenny Omega get utilized in a way that adds a whole new dimension to what he's done so far in his career. And if people in WWE got excited about him and saw glimpses of his personality and said, we can build on this and turn this into a storyline and use his name value and equity and like almost show up Tony Khan and, you know, show up Kenny Omega on his own and go, look, we're going to make this guy something bigger than he ever imagined he could be. I mean, that might be something we're talking about a year from now. All right. Deke, anything else you want to wrap up with?
Oh, that's it. No, I appreciate it, guys. And the Bloodline is literally the only thing that keeps me watching wrestling. I think it's been amazing the whole time, going back to him and Jay 2 years ago. I'm a guy that absolutely would change the channel when Sammy came on, and I think he's been the wrestler of the year the last 6 months. I mean, I think he's been incredible. So,
yeah.
You know, like you said, Wade, if you can make me like Sammy or care for Sammy, they can do it with other guys too. But you can't always – you're not going to hit a home run every single time you're at bat. So I'm a little worried about that because they did. They struck gold, you know, here with Sammy. Can you do it again? Mm-hmm. And what we do. So, yeah, that's why I asked, man. I just wondered. But, no, man, I always appreciate it as always, guys. And thanks for letting me on, man. Go VIP.
Cool. Thanks. Good. Thanks, Steve. Good to talk to you. I am absolutely fine if nothing tops Sammy. But the Bloodline storyline goes on being very good to excellent, but not, you know, as exciting as this past, you know, 9, 10, 11 months has been. You know, it doesn't have it's not like something that falls a little short of this is like, oh God, they should have ended it while they could. You know, it's like I'm okay with it's just being really good and not excellent. My standards are flexible in that way. Trying to top what's happened with Sami Zayn organically is probably ambitious and setting yourself up for disappointment, but there's enough of a foundation here. Javier, do you still hold out hope, expectations? What's your range of thoughts on the potential of Jimmy and Jay as this bloodline storyline moves on into 2023 and 2024?
It's going to be interesting. they're really interesting because I'm almost want them to split up for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if the bloodline blows up between now and next WrestleMania, I like them to. I'd like to see them go off and do their own thing for a bit, and then like come back together. You know, and maybe put back together the bloodline again, but as a as a face, because you get the whole, oh, they're back together now. But I'd like to see, I would actually like to see them now start, away from Roman, away from the bloodline part of it, and see what they can do. I kind of want Jimmy now to get a little bit more of like what Jay had at this point, because, this is really the first time he's had a big, on his own moment, dramatic moment, because everything else he's kind of been like letting his brother shine, and yeah. I'm curious to see what he can actually run and do with him getting a spotlight himself.
And keep in mind one aspect of this storyline that's brilliant is Roman Reigns negotiated a part-time schedule that people were freaking out over when word got out, and now look at it, they turned him appearing into a ratings attraction, but they have this whole supporting crew that keeps things super interesting in the meantime. And they've turned Roman not being around, I wouldn't say into a positive, but they've gotten much more positive out of him being gone than I think people anticipated. And maybe it is a net, is it a net positive not having him around every week and having that anticipation get built up, even if people are disappointed sometimes when he's not on, especially if they attend a live show?
Yeah, I think it's an issue with the live shows, but in the people who are live, but they're not serving the live audiences. They're part of the set dressing. It's for the TV audience.
Yeah.
I think for the TV audience, it is better because the important thing is that his presence is felt. And I think some of the worst. That's the thing. And
someone should say that when they no-show their work. They're like, my presence was felt.
You know, I've tried it. It didn't work. Definitely like, you know, which, and like, I felt that the weaker shows were the ones where the rest of the bloodline didn't have much of a role either. Particularly like, on the Raws, because those were 3-hour shows with barely any presence of the champion. But since his shadow, he's right now he's casting such a big shadow that mm-hmm. you don't, as a viewer on TV, obviously you're the audience, you're there, it's different. But, you know, the audience on TV doesn't really miss him because they're talking about him. You're wondering what he's thinking. You're wondering what he's going to do, when he finds out what just happened. That's always in the back of your mind when you're watching these people interact.
By the way, speaking of what we just talked about, Tom, our on-site correspondent, Thomas emailed. He goes, also, I remembered I wanted to say the crowd was really bummed when Paul Heyman's Roman Reigns would be there on SmackDown next week. Lots of boos. So just perfect, playing right into what we're saying. But, yeah, for a TV standpoint, for the ebb and flow of things, 52 weeks a year, there's a freshness to Roman. It's sort of like, wait till Dad gets home, you know, that old thing. And that they play that really well. Josh in Florida on this.
Well, to the point that I would use that formula, even if you have someone who's full-time, and not have him show up on the show and
he'll
be there for the dark match, you know?
Yeah, yep. I mean, it would be a little weird if they say on the TV show he's not here and then he shows up in the dark match, I guess.
Well,
you'd want to have a little storyline explanation.
Yeah.
I don't think that's old school to want that. But I you can absolutely pull that off.
Yeah.
Okay, so Josh in Florida emailed and said the Sammy and Jimmy exchange was a necessary part of the story that needed to be told, and Jay didn't even need to say a word. I can't wait to see what happens next. Jay standing there and then walking out and watching. I mean, it is. It's not. It's so much is being expressed without words. Jimmy just like snarling at what Sammy was saying, but also having this layer beneath it that looked like he was not breaking, but emotional at a level that where, yes, what Sammy's saying is true, but there's nothing I can do about who I am and who my family is and what our constitution is for how we look out for each other. But I'm angry because Sammy's speaking the truth, and I know he's right. Like, there just are – he told that story with his facial expressions. And then Sammy is, you know, transitioning into a more serious character, you know, and I think doing so in a way that feels authentic and still likable – and people are still relating to him. And I was a little worried if he got kind of humorless and super serious that a lot of what made Sammy popular would go away. But, you know, I think he's really effective, especially tonight. You know, it impressed me. I think he's really effective in the more serious, I'm tired of this shit type Sammy. I've had enough. And I'm going to vent and I want revenge. And my life's goal professionally is to end the bloodline. And he's dead serious about it. And I think people feel that seriousness. And it doesn't feel like a stretch for him to be in this role. And I think it would have been hard to imagine a year ago, you know, that this would be where the Sammy Dean character would be.
Yeah, I mean, that's why when, you know, like, I don't need it to him to say, I'm coming for your title, Roman, you know, because you cheated me this, you know, in the last match. Because by him saying, I'm going to destroy the bloodline, and particularly tonight, him saying that you don't have to be part of the bloodline when I do it, because the bloodline is Roman Reigns. You know, so he's saying that he's coming after Roman Reigns, and how do you destroy him? By taking away the title. That's kind of implied, and I'd rather him not talk about it right now when Cody is the guy that Roman Reigns is going to fight, because I don't think you want people thinking about Sami Zayn and the title right now. As a matter of fact, I kind of like almost want Roman not to be involved with the Jay and Jimmy thing, because that's too close to Sammy. Because I think that with you know, Cody Rhodes, you could have that plot line also going for the title, and you're telling the story, because that one also has a good story. It has the story of, you know, they got to reemphasize a little bit more, which is, you know, I'm here to finish the story for my father. So, you know, So you have that good story, and now you have to just make the Uso part of it and the Jay and the Jimmy and the Sammy and the KO part so compelling where it could almost be where that feels like the main story going to WrestleMania and Roman Reigns actually being the B story, which would be really interesting, because I think that could actually happen. And when we were talking, I remember one of the things that Todd had said when he was talking about you can't give the title to Drew because Roman Reigns is going to be the A story and Drew with the title is going to be the B story. I think that they could actually make it so that the idea of two estranged friends coming together against the two brothers who have, you know, this conflict going on, the drama of that, I think, could overshadow what would be the main event, which is Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns.
Could you one with Sammy and KO against Usos?
I'm sorry, you broke up there a little bit.
Could you headline night one of WrestleMania with KO and Sammy against Usos, and then headline night two with Roman against Cody?
I don't think it would do that, just because of the fact that the two main events are already. I think we're gonna have four main events. You're not gonna have five. But I think, like, spiritually, that would be the one that people would be more interested in. I don't think it would be like yes in a no officially, but yes in a, you know, spiritual kind of way. I couldn't find the words.
I mean, Jason Paul and I talked about that on the flagship, and, you know, the WrestleMania lineup and the possibilities of which matches could imagine going on last. And I mean, it's going to be a hard act to follow, whatever they do in, you know, if it's Charlotte and Rhea or whatever, it's going to be a hard act to follow. All right.
I mentioned the AEW storylines that reminded me of, it was when Sami Zayn showed up with the hood, that reminded me of the story that Kazarian was doing as the Bullet Club Hunter. in AEW, where he was showing up and he wanted to destroy the Bullet Club, and he was showing up wherever the Bullet Club was in a hooded thing, and this room, and that's what Sammy's doing, that he's the Bloodline Hunter, you know, doing you know, showing up where the Bloodline's at.
Yep.
That was the story I was thinking of.
Frankie Kazarian will be happy with that comparison, but maybe lamenting that it didn't work out quite as well for him as it is for Sammy. It's one of those went nowhere storylines. All right, Josh also added, by the way, Josh in Florida in his email, Dominic continues to impress me every week, and he is involved in two major stories heading into WrestleMania. Who saw that coming? We've already gushed about Dominic, but so is Josh. We've got Dave from Pompano Beach, Florida, who says, wait, and Javier, I have to tell you, Dominic has made me a believer. He is in a real group with his heel character. His acting is a million times better than it was. He basically monologued tonight and held his own in the ring with Charlotte. He has a lot of work to do in the ring, but I've been really impressed with him lately. Thanks for reading my email, and everyone go VIP. Thanks, Dave. What's your journey with Dominic, and how much is him getting better in the ring essential to being able to fully capitalize on the other things that he's showing that he's good at?
As long as he's competent, because, I mean, WWE is not, like, really the high, you know, like, you don't need super high work rate. It's nice to have, but, you know, as long as you can tell the story in the ring and not be botching your moves, it could be simple stuff. I think that as long as he could get that stuff done and he's there, I think that's fine. And, but yeah, I mean, I've been, you know, I've always been kind of high on him since the get go. I've enjoyed the storylines, both as when he was a face, much more now, definitely. You know, with him being a heel and then running with the whole prison and him just like with the teardrop tattoo, you know, that's just, I mean, he's just the worst. And then like the lowbrow sexist stuff he was talking to the queen, you know, which is like, was just like, you just want to smack him. You know, it was just, I mean, it's pitch perfect. And like the annoying way that he talked, just everything works for the way that, that he's being, where he's at. Granted, I don't know what happens after this, so we'll see. But I think, I think he has the ability of being like a Miz kind of character. Just a guy that's just constantly annoying.
Yeah, for sure. Jay from New York emailed and said, hello, Wade and Javier. After watching the LA Knight Kofi Kingston segment in a match, a thought hit me. LA Knight's on the wrong brand. Everything about his presentation would be a perfect antagonist for Austin Theory. I think he'd be a good opponent for Seth Rollins, too. Your thoughts? Well, Austin Theory's a heel. LA Knight's a heel, right? I mean, opposite of New Day. Sometimes it can get confusing. But I think we have a ways to go before we want to think of LA Knight being the fan favorite. But if people really like him and start cheering him because he's, you know, charismatic in a way that appeals to them, I mean, WWE might have to call an audible, but LA Knight against Seth Rollins could work too. If we have a post-WrestleMania roster shakeup, you know, they'll be looking at LA Knight and he's going to be on their list of people that they're going, all right, who do we want him to be on the same brand as so we can have some good upper mid-card feuds with him? Javier, your thoughts?
The interesting thing about LA Knight is that what I've seen on social media and stuff like that of people talking about him, he kind of feels like he has a certain following that is sort of like the Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné following, that like almost cultish following for some people, that like, you know, particularly the ones who think that he's a babyface, you know, those people. And, you know, and he has certain, like, you know, not on the same level as Sasha Banks, but he has a certain level of, like, you know, like, hardcore followers. I like him a lot. I'm just not to that level. But yeah, I mean, I he's one of them that I like to see him get more and see what they can do. Probably post-Mania he'd be someone I'd like them to give a you know, more to, which I understand why people are like down to him losing to Kofi, because, you know, you want to see that movement up. I just don't think it's, you know, can't believe I somehow ended up, you know, I was more down on it than you. Yeah. Ended up defending you more than anything. but, you know, it is what it is. And yeah, I had something else I was going to say, but it slipped my mind.
Yeah. Someone listening to the show just, or maybe they're just commenting, but they said maybe Rock joins Sammy and KO at SummerSlam for a trios match, a six man tag against Roman and the Usos, and just blow up the viewership numbers on not Pluto, not what's the Peacock? I don't know. Suddenly I went blank on Peacock, and they can brag about setting all records. Anyway. Okay, a couple emails on Bray, and then we might wrap up here. But we'll see. JB for Detroit says, I really feel as though Bray Wyatt needs to focus his character. There's so many facets and platitudes that I really don't have any feelings in his character or story one way or the other. Uncle Howdy, Firefly, Funhouse, rumors of other characters involved. Just tell the story that translates to the ring and has fans invested for it against you. As always, love the show and go VIP. Before we respond to that, Alex McDonald, who covers SmackDown on PWTorch.com with his TV reports alongside mine, says, hey, Wade, I saw Javier was co-hosting, so I figured I'd email. Javier, can you please explain what that was with Bray? Also, can you tell me when Uncle Howdy turned face and when they became a team? Wade, I know you don't know either, so I figured the Wyatt Whisperer could help us out. So that's his first question. I'll read a couple other points he has here too, but Javier, take it away. You've got 20 seconds. Let's make sense of this.
Gut feeling. I think that there was a pivot because I think the storyline that they were telling was if the everybody wanted Bray Wyatt to be more like the Fiend, while his character was I don't want to become that, and it was going to be that struggle. I think that's the story they were going to tell, but you were essentially going up against what the fans want. The fans wanted violence and wanted him to be more violent, be more, Fiend. And I think that I have a feeling there was a pivot, is my gut feeling, my gut reaction to that. And I think that right now, the reason that we haven't seen him on TV, as much in the last couple of weeks or, particularly doing anything of any, substance, is because I think they're actually replanning the way that they're going to be rolling this out. Because I had said earlier, and I mean, I might have been completely wrong, but, I had said earlier that I thought that the idea was that the Wyatt Six was going to be something he was going to be feuding against, fighting the darker angels of his nature. And I think they're just going to go ahead and just say, hey, screw it, and we're just going to make this team, and we'll see where we go on from here. But, I mean, it just feels like there's been a pivot in the way they were going to tell the story. But I mean, that's just gut feeling. That's just me, prognosticating. So take that.
Yeah. So, all right. There you go, Alex. He says, also, I realized I was on the show last week and forgot to talk about Karrion Kross. I've actually liked him over the past couple of months in the feud with Rey. However, why do they insist on having their matches end like this? They're not blowing off their feud at Mania, so why not blow it off now? I'm way more into Karrion Kross now than before. I'm with Alex on this the last couple months. It's the hair. He seems like he's healthier in the ring. His promos are more grounded in somebody who I think I might run into real life as opposed to, I don't want to be mean. It was just bad acting. It was like, as I said, his character before was just some amateur guy trying to scare little girls in a haunted house. And now it feels more real, more grounded, more multidimensional, more nuanced. It's in a pro wrestling sense. It fits better, and he's been a mean bully to Ray, and that's fine. What do you think about what he said about the finish, and why not blow it off with the buildup that they had as they pivot to other things?
I think it's just because you want to get Kross a win. While also protecting Mysterio, I think is ultimately what, so Kross moves up just slightly while Mysterio, doesn't lose anything because you're furthering the story with the sun. So something that happens is when it feels like somebody's a tourist in somebody else's storyline. That's kind of what it feels like Kross is with the whole Dominic thing. I may be wrong because, there could be more stuff between Kross and because I don't think this was the blow-off. Let me phrase that. If this was the blow-off, because it could have been. I think that would be the case. If it's not the blow off, then it's not the blow off. We still have to get one more match out of this.
Yeah. I also said they really got their money's worth out of Dominic tonight, huh? Great use. And this is Alex still. My obligatory plug for PW Torch 90s Past Cast. which this week features the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter coverage 30 years ago this week of the resignation of Bill Watts as WCW Vice President, as well as hype for Super Brawl 3. Next week dives into the death of Kerry Von Erich. Thanks, and have a good one. So, yeah, everyone listening, if you haven't yet, why not subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast? Great crew, 7 different shows, different show each day of the week with different co-hosts and different themes. There will be likely more than one, and maybe all 7 that you add to your weekly list of podcasts that you listen to from our great team on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Just search PW Torch and subscribe, and while you're at it, search PW Torch. When you search PW Torch, you'll see the charcoal logo. That's a PW Torch VIP free sample feed, which you can upgrade into a full VIP podcast feed on your Apple podcast. You can use your Apple account to upgrade a VIP, and you get a few days to try it free. So search PW Torch, subscribe to both logos that pop up, and upgrade to a full VIP membership while you're at it. Then you could get all the daily casts with the ads and plugs removed. Okay. Thank you, Alex. Good topics. Let's see. Ryan's been on hold this whole time. We'll wrap up with Ryan, and then anything you want to add, Javier, before we sign off here. Ryan, thanks for holding. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
I'm going to make a very weird comparison for Jay Uso on who he reminds me of. Brutus the Barber Beefcake, yeah, as far as the storyline goes. If you remember, the Dream Team broke up, and Brutus went on to become a fairly big single star, and then there was a new Dream Team, so could this be like the new Usos with Solo filling in for Jay?
Okay.
They did do the first match, you know.
Yeah, I think you delivered a parallel scenario as best you can, going back, you know, what feels like 60 years now, with was it Dino Bravo and was the new Dream Team, right, Brian?
Yeah,
Greg Valentine and Dino Bravo, was that the new Dream Team? Yeah, I'm remembering right. And yeah, I mean, Brutus, you know, he was very limited in the ring, and he had friends in high places and you know, served purposes in that way, but he they broke him off and turned him into a upper mid-card single star, until Hogan had control in WCW and turned him into a main eventer at a Starrcade. But anyway, this would be an upgraded version, talent-wise and all that. But I see what you're saying. Javier, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that I was thinking that might be an interesting if they invoke I forgot the name of the team now. The Freebird rule. And
I just wanted to see how long it took you.
You did that to me with Claudio Castagnoli the other on AEW also. I'm kind of angry at that. the Freebird rule, and like have, you know, ultimately, because that might be a possibility is Kevin Owens and that'd be crazy. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus Solo and Jimmy with Jay as the guest referee.
All right. Ryan, back to you.
You did not sound excited for that one, Wes.
Okay. I have a question on, you brought up sort of Andrea, Charlotte's husband. I don't know if it's likely
I missed what you said. Yeah.
Andrade.
Yeah, Andrea was Andrea the Giant was Tully Blanchard's female valet back in the late 80s. Nicola Roberts? She went by Andrea for a while. Yeah, no, that's fine. Andrade, yep. Yeah, she mentioned him, dropped his name, so we might be,
And took a shot at his accent. That was... You know, I kind of felt bad because I took a shot of his accent like a while ago, and I kind of felt bad because, you know, she did. So I'm like, hey, I feel much better now. I feel vindicated.
Anyway, Ryan, what was your point? Or I think I tapped on you a little bit there with the sidebar pronunciation.
Well, I'm on drugs right now because of the surgery. So that's why my speech is a little slurred. But my question was, is it more likely that Big E will return? Because, you know, they're hitting at that LA Knight wins WrestleMania Mim, and I was thinking the only way he could have his WrestleMania Mim is if he wrestled Big E, or you think it's more likely or going to be sooner that we see Charlotte's husband get in the fray with Dominic, because they were really teasing that match also.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about adding Andrade to the character, but I mean, or to Charlotte's act, but I mean, maybe it'll work and maybe it's what she needs to kind of feel fresh again. What do you think about Rhea and Dominic against Andrade and Charlotte, Javier, something maybe post for us?
Well, I mean, it depends on what Andrade's contract situation is. Cause I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he's taking time off for, I think he had a shoulder surgery. Was it with?
I don't even remember.
Yeah, because he had some sort of injury, and I know there's bad blood with, you know, in the AEW thing, and I wouldn't be surprised if Tony Khan just, you know, makes him hold out the add the time to the contract of that he was out. So I don't know when that would happen. I think this was just more of a throwaway line by Charlotte. Down the road, who knows?
All right, Ryan, what else?
And my final question's on Karrion Kross. A lot of people were high on him in NXT. It seemed like once he went to the WWE main roster, people said he was wrestling slow. Like, I know Jim Valley has mentioned that his name is making a parallel that I guess he wrestles like Greg the Hammer Valentine and how methodical he is in the ring. So is there a reason why that fans sort of like turned on him, or they're not as high on him on the main roster?
Well, I mean, there's different narratives out there that I'm not privy to, but I don't really answer to other narratives. I thought Karrion Kross was slow and clunky, and it was in NXT, and I thought it was, you know, pretty vastly overrated coming in from Impact. And so I think people who think he got worse in WWE and that was somehow unfair were just really overrating his work in NXT. I think he was I reported and analyzed all along that he would be in trouble on the main roster if he didn't step up his game. And that was during his time in NXT, you know, and I'm not going to, you know, beat him up again or you know, talk about all the things back then, because I think he's better now. But anyone who thought he was good in NXT and then you're trying to figure out why don't people love him in WWE, I would say the answer is people were blind to how below average he was in NXT, and they're wrong to say he was worse on the main roster. The problem is on the main roster. Well, I guess they're not wrong in the sense that he wasn't working on the main roster with smaller workers who created more movement. And he got exposed pretty quickly on the main roster when he wasn't being taken care of and his weaknesses weren't hidden as well. So I guess that's my take. Javier, how about you?
Yeah, he was more of a presence and impact than anything else, and you know, they portrayed him as a killer. So it was the push and the storyline that got him over with me. It wasn't until NXT where I saw him wrestle, and when he showed up again, it was also about the presentation and the gimmick and the look and all that stuff, which was just, you know, top notch. And then he had that match with Keith Lee, which actually wasn't bad, but it was below par of like the stuff that we were getting at that point. But I was like, okay, you know, that can happen. Unfortunately, he got injured during that match, and that essentially for me killed his mystique. And I think that also killed the mystique with a lot of fans, because he was being built as being built as a monster, as unkillable monster. And the fact that he then had to I think he relinquished the title because of the injury, that kind of made him seem human. And then when he came back, he was more thrown into the mix. You had that, we're going to teach him a lesson promo from Adam Cole, which also did not help, where, you know, Adam Cole in the promo basically pointed out all his downsides. And and then you from there, that was around the time that WWE was basically needed people, and they were raiding anybody they can get from NXT. And they just said, hey, here's Karrion Kross. Vince McMahon had no idea what the hell to do with him and put him inside a stupid mask, and it was just downhill from there. So, yeah, that's pretty much covers Karrion Kross.
Yeah.
I think that person, you know, he has a certain type of charisma, which I like. I think you could work in a ring in a style that'll actually work. he's shown that he's done, you know, a certain amount, you know, a certain amount of that so far. So I just don't think he you know, I never really thought that the ceiling was like, I always thought the ceiling was like intercontinental U.S. title for in any way. Some people might have thought U.S. WWE championship. Those people are crazy.
Yeah. good summary overall there. Ryan, appreciate the call. Good topic.
Thanks for taking it. If that caller thought Evansville was small, when I get tapings, Wilkes-Barre and Hershey are a lot smaller than Evansville. I can't say that.
I went to a taping at Bushkill, Pennsylvania, like 30 years ago. It was in New York City. Was going to go see Conan O'Brien, and my friend and I were like, we had tickets, and we're like, let's drive and go see Raw tapings, and or maybe it was syndicated. It was Raw or syndicated. It was Raw tapings. Man, was that probably the smallest venue they've ever shot TV at. But it was wild, and it was sold out. We bribed our way into the building. We paid off a security guy to let us in because they had sold out the small venue. There's some good memories going to small town shows, especially when it's a big time company in a small town. It can be a very different vibe. Anyway, Ryan, cool. Thanks.
Thanks for taking it.
Yep. Take care. All right, Javier, anything you want to say as we wrap up here? Any topics in your notes or anything we...
No, I mean, just one little thing that I enjoyed in the cross match. There's a point where they were outside, and there was it looks like it was a kid wearing a Mysterio mask. And he turned to the kid, Cross turned to the kid and goes, oh, so you like Rey Mysterio, huh? And then did a backbreaker right in front of him. that's something the kids could remember. That was a choice moment. That was awesome. That was, you know, it was improvised. Great on him. He knows how to, you know, he's got something.
It's fun. It's fun seeing something that was one dimensional and to me underwhelming in the ring and as a character, and to see it be tweaked just enough to be good. You know what I mean? Like he's good in the role that he's in, and a lot of, you know, any criticism at this point of him or disappointment is just people having higher expectations than maybe was fair. But I think he's in a good spot now, and yeah, I mean, I don't want, like, if he, you know, disappeared tomorrow, it's not going to hurt WWE, but I don't think he's going to be a future pay-per-view main event guy or perennial or anything like that. But the role he's in is good. You know, just kind of a top of the second tier, bottom of the first tier gatekeeper heel, who's a bully and has a cool entrance. And yeah, I'm not annoyed by the cartoonishness of it anymore. The hair made a difference too, but other things did too. All right.
I always worry that when you mention that he's going to go back to that. It's like,
yeah, I know.
Stop tempting fate with.
Yeah, good point. All right, very good. We went long. It was fun. Covered a lot of bases. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Javier, anything you want to plug?
No, just that I keep a lookout for the primers and stuff like that. Pretty much the PW Touch Ronin doing stuff here and there.
Yeah, cool. All right, thanks, Javier. Thanks to our on-site correspondent, our main one, and our secondary one, Jordan, and our callers and our emailers. And we'll talk to you all next time.